Geev Galair. Hello, everybody, wherever you are, and Cead Mila Fáilte. You're very welcome to our latest edition of History and Community here, and it's brought to you by, as usual, Dublin North Bay Tourism. And we're here on near 90.3 FM and available worldwide on the web. Well, as you know by now, our programmes explore all aspects of local history in our North Dublin neighbourhood. We feature the area's lore and legend, its cultural and literary heritage, its traditions. We examine the famous events and personalities, the historic buildings, the landmarks, the monuments and memorials, schools, churches, clubs. Nothing will get away from our clutches, not forgetting the ecologically rich UNESCO-declared Dublin North Bay biosphere. So we concentrate, as I say, on all those aspects from week to week, and we try to come up with a sort of a different one each week. So, in a moment, I'll be getting on to our main subject today, which is the Daniel O'Connell and the talking about the upcoming anniversary of the famous Clontarf Monster meeting that never was. But first, I want to begin today with a little word about our friend COVID-19 and the ongoing situation. And, there's been a lot of talk this week and that about rewards and everything. And, you know, everybody needs to be commended on, you know, on the overall effort to date in fighting this pandemic. But as the plague it is, it shows no sign of going away. So we should concentrate, I feel, on keeping our guard up rather than get involved in a war of words as to who should be rewarded for, you know, for services rendered. It's more important to remember our struggle against what is really a very determined and very undefinable enemy. An enemy it is. Yeah, believe you me. Now, surely what counts now is keeping up the team effort across the community until the dragon is finally slain. Life itself is what really matters, and we can put no monetary value on life or the quality of life. Rewards and compensation could backfire and prove divisive. In different ways, just about everybody did their bit and are doing their bit to stave off this pestilence. And all are heroes. So, in any case, we should remember the words of that old poker song, which declares, "There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done." So that's my little advice on the COVID situation. We'll move on now to our weekly quiz, which, you know, again, is proving very, very popular. I'll just say, as usual, that we issue two questions each week, and we invite your answers. The quiz is open to everyone everywhere, and there's a prize of a book for the winner each week. So again, I say thanks for the many entries, and it's good to see that people are listening and love the challenge of a quiz. So I'll start with the answers to last week's quiz. And the first question was, it's a who am I question. I was very well known on RTE radio and television. I died recently. Known for my charity walks, I walked many roads around Ireland fundraising with Clontarf GA Club members. Who am I? Well, that person was Dunica O'Dooling. And I'm sure now when I say his name, if you hadn't got it already, you'll get it now. Famous for many, many programmes over the years. And when I mentioned those charity walks, I had the pleasure of walking with Dunica on four occasions, I think it was. The first one was a walk from Clare to Clontarf, reenacting the steps of Brian Boru to the Battle of Clontarf. The second one was a marathon. It was the O'Neill O'Donnell March. If those of you know your history, O'Neill and O'Donnell marched from Donegal all the way down to Kinsale in 1601, where they were defeated by they and a Spanish troop who had come to help the Irish were defeated in the famous Battle of Kinsale, and that led eventually to what we call the Flight of the Earls, which ended really old Gaeldom. And another one I did with Dunica, and in conjunction, by the way, with members of Clontarf GA Club and others, was the Ring of Kerry, and I remember that very, very good, very well. We often associate Kerry with the west of Ireland in general, with, you know, rain and wet weather or that. Well, we had a glorious week. I don't think there was a shower that particular week we spent walking the Ring of Kerry. So for Dunica, I have those wonderful memories. I guess, you know, Gulach Gorowshe. The second question was another, who am I? And a lot of you got caught on this one, and I was surprised, really. It went like this. I, Patrick Heaney, set the lyrics of a very famous song written by my friend. I set it to music. And I, Liam O'Rin, translated that song into Irish. Can you name the song and the author of the song? Well, the song is our national anthem, our own Navian, or the soldier song. And the author is Pather Kearney. Now, Pather wrote that in around 1910, 11, 12. And he wrote in English. And his friend, as I said, Patrick Heaney, set it to music. And later, Liam O'Rin translated it into Irish. Now, it became our national anthem. It was officially declared so in 1926 by the then Liam T. Cosgrave government. Now, the thing about that song was it became popular. Before that, the marching song of you know, Irish soldiers training and that, and coming up to the volunteer time and leading up to 1916, their favourite song was a song called God Save Ireland, and that was written by A.M. Sullivan. And it was written, again, if you know your history, in the 80s, in memory of the Manchester martyrs. You remember Alan, Larkin and O'Brien, the three who were hanged in Manchester, three Fenians, for something they didn't do, actually, and they're quite innocent. And Anne Sullivan wrote the song God Save Ireland, and that became the marching song of, as I say, volunteers and soldiers training in Dublin and other parts of the country. But then when Pather Kearney song came along, they adopted that and it took over from Anne Sullivan, if you like. And Kearney, of course, was an uncle of a writer, Brendan Behan. So you could say the writing and all that runs in a family. Okay, now we'll move on to this week's questions. And we have two questions for you again. And these shouldn't... By the way, we'll be on to the winner. I get around to getting the book to the winner in our own time. These two shouldn't cause you much problems. The first one is, can you name three places or areas in North Dublin, the spellings of which end in the letter Y? No, that shouldn't be. When we say North Dublin, by the way, we mean north of the Liffey. So that, I'll just repeat that one. Can you name three places or areas in North Dublin, the spellings of which end in the letter Y? Now, number two, three of these people were born in North Dublin. Which is the odd one out? I'm going to give you four names. The names are U2's Bono, Maureen Potter, James Larkin and Bram Stoker. I'll read that question again. Three of these people were born in North Dublin. I'm going to give you four names. Tell me which is the odd one out. U2's Bono, Maureen Potter, James Larkin and Bram Stoker. And as usual, the quiz is open, as I've said already, to everyone everywhere. Send your answers to Instagram at Dublin North Bay Tourism. Search Facebook, Dublin North Bay Tourism, or email us, if you like, at dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. That's our quiz now, and we move on to a little bit of music. And we're going to play that song that I mentioned, the God Save Ireland, which sort of predated the national anthem as the marching song of the volunteers. So here's Dermot O'Brien's version. You remember Dermot, the great loud ballad singer, with his version of God Save Ireland.
God save Ireland, said the heroes. God save Ireland, said they all. Whether on the scaffold high or the battlefields we die, or what matter when forever and near we fall. High upon the gallows tree swung the noble-hearted three, for the vengeful tyrant stricken in their bloom. But they met him face to face with the courage of their race, and they went with souls undaunted to do their doom. God save Ireland, said the hero. Fields we die, or what matter when forever and dear we fall.
with England's fatal corner round them cast. Close beside the gallows tree, kissed like brothers lovingly, true to home and faith and freedom to the last.
God save Ireland, said the heroes. God save Ireland, said they all. Whether on the scaffold high or the battlefields we die, oh, what matter when for e'er and here we fall.
Never till the latest day shall the memory pass away of the gallant life thus given for our land. For on the cause must go amidst joy or weal or woe, till we make our island nation free and grand.
God save Ireland, said the heroes. God save Ireland, said they all. Whether on the scaffold high or the battlefields we die, oh, what matter when for e'er and dear we fall. Oh, what matter when for e'er and dear we fall.
That was Dermot O'Brien with his version of A.M. Sullivan's song, God Save Ireland. Now, last week I introduced the subject of Daniel O'Connell, and we're going to spend, as I say, a programme or two on this, because the background is that next week, the 8th of October, is the famous anniversary of the monster meeting in Clontarf that actually never took place. But we're going to deal with Daniel first, a few things about him and memorials to him and so on, and then it'll probably be next week before we actually do the what happened at Clontarf, or what didn't happen, if you like. Now, if you remember last time, we said that Daniel came on the scene at a very low when Ireland was at a very low ebb. The 1798 rebellion had been brutally crushed, Wolfe Tone and so on and so forth. You had Grattan's Parliament, which had gained a little freedom, independence, was now no more because the Act of Union came into being, which got rid of the Irish Parliament, the Irish House of Commons and so on, and the Lords. And the penal laws were still very much, penal laws against Catholics and Presbyterians were still very much in vogue. So in 1823, O'Connell jointly founded the Catholic Association, and he became its main spokesman to fight for Catholic emancipation. Now, this quickly earned him a very high national profile. He opened the association to everyone, and this was his strength, for a subscription of a penny a month, known as the Catholic Rent. Now, the organisation became a massive popular movement, and that was the strength right through his life. The masses behind him, everybody felt involved. Now, this movement was new and different. It was different to anything ever experienced across the centre of Europe. In fact, it was the first large democratic organisation of modern times. This is one part in O'Connell's list of history. He embarked on a crusade to gain equality and religious freedom for Irish Catholics, who at the time were literally degraded under the draconian penal laws. Now, on winning the Clare election in 1829 and entering the British House of Commons, he vowed to use every possible constitutional means to gain political ends. Crucially, he had the support of the very powerful Irish Catholic clergy. Now, on gaining Catholic emancipation in 1829, he became known throughout Ireland as the Liberator or the Emancipator. Now he set his sights on the repeal of the Act of Union, which had been guided into law by the then British Prime Minister William Pitt in December 1800, and it became law in January 1801. Now, from his early manhood, O'Connell had denounced the Act of Union as an obstacle to the Catholic cause, and until his death he remained an avowed repealer. After 1842, he led the repeal movement, and he believed, that the ultimate success of the goal was certain. He led the masses of Irish Catholics in a campaign of peaceful agitation. And when we say the masses of Irish Catholics, remember, pre-famine Ireland had over 8 million people. So a lot of people. Now, O'Connell realised the potential in collective power and how it gave confidence and hope. He brought the energy of unity of purpose, moral force instead of violence, to the British government. Now, O'Connell's message was clear. Achieve goals by peaceable legal, democratic and constitutional means, and none other. He had nothing in common with Irish revolutionaries, who were openly prepared to use physical force to achieve separation and independence from England. Now, O'Connell's stature became monumental. He was a titan, and he was the pioneer in the field of mobilising masses to advance political and social causes. O'Connell was a demagogue, and he led the Irish Catholic people with a charismatic swagger. Later Irish leaders and political movements, such as the Land League, Parnell and Sinn Féin, tried to emulate his methods and his strategies. Now, you can state that O'Connell, more than anybody else, created modern Irish democracy. Many simply regard him as the father of Irish democracy. Indeed, he was a great European democrat, as his peaceful persuasion and democratic system and tactics, they were significant across Europe, in that he showed, as a Catholic himself, that his new democracy did not clash with the old faith and the old church values, which was, of course, at that stage still very, very strong across Europe. Now, a contemporary comment from King Ludwig of Bavaria with regard to O'Connell, and he declared, "That energetical character is inseparable forever from the history of our age." In his time, a later British Prime Minister, William Gladstone, he spoke about O'Connell and he said, "Surely the greatest popular leader the world has ever seen." Now, that's coming from a British Prime Minister. Now, he was the harbinger of peaceful revolution, and his impact was colossal, and he greatly influenced and inspired later pacifists, for example, like Mahatma Gandhi in India and Martin Luther King in America, both of whom studied his methods and devoted their work and leadership to non-violence. And O'Connell's methods and tactics are still relevant today, and Nelson Mandela in South Africa would have been another pupil of O'Connell's, if you like. Now, O'Connell, as a man, he was tall, burly and very energetic. He was an orator, a political organiser and an agitator, as well as a parliamentarian. A figure of integrity, he was flamboyant, with an enviable, charismatic type person. And this charisma, which, despite his faults, just about everyone appreciated, except his avowed enemy and nemesis, the later British Prime Minister, Robert Peel. With very good reason, O'Connell labelled him Orange Peel. And Peel was Prime Minister twice during O'Connell's era. He was Prime Minister from 1834 to 35, and then crucially during the repeal campaign, Peel was again Prime Minister in 1841 to 46. And he was obviously responsible eventually for the eventual failure of the movement. Now, a pacifist, O'Connell was not a separatist or a Republican. What he wanted was a proper representative parliament for the Irish people. He had courage and perseverance. He was verbally strong and tenacious, and he totally believed in passive resistance and civil disobedience. A towering figure in Irish history, his means were constitutional and peaceful, and his modus operandi was agitate, agitate, agitate. And his overall contribution to Ireland and its people is surely immense. Now, a large, we'll just talk about the memorials to O'Connell around Dublin before we go on to the actual meetings themselves. and the memorials to him show how much, you know, he's remembered, and you know how big a character he was in the overall history of the country. And I suppose when you look at it, very few of our politicians ever had an international standing. There's a book by Robert Kenning, is it, on world leaders. Now, the only one he mentions of the Irish is, in fact, Brian Boru, was a world figure in because of the Viking thing across Europe at the time. O'Connell had that, he was copied internationally, and perhaps in his own way, De Valera in his own time became something of an international figure. But beyond that, we didn't have many if you like, on an international stage. With the EEC now, I suppose, some of our Taoiseach are getting a little bit of recognition. But certainly O'Connell was recognised worldwide. And in remembering him, we have a large monument commemorating Daniel with the bronze figure of him on the top. The top facing the Liffey. This monument stands at the Liffey end of Lower O'Connell Street. So the O'Connell Monument, well known to you all, I'm sure. It was placed there in 1854. Now, O'Connell Bridge was first built in 1791 as Carlisle Bridge. It was rebuilt and named O'Connell Bridge in 1877. And there's a second, this often comes up in quizzes. So here's your answer if you're ever asked it. Where is the other O'Connell Bridge in Dublin? Well, there's a second O'Connell Bridge in St. Stephen's Green. Now, O'Connell Street itself was first named Drogheda Street and then Sackville Street. And it was renamed O'Connell Street in 1924. And there's a statue of O'Connell in the rotunda of City Hall. And that's up beyond Dame Street there, Cork Hill. And there's a plaque to his memory at 58 Merrion Square, where he lived. Now, his portrait also appeared on the 1999 Irish C-Series £20 banknote. I suppose younger listeners wouldn't know what the pound is now. Well, it's there in sterling, all right, but we had the Irish pound at that stage, and O'Connell featured on the £20 note. And the famous O'Connell Schools, just off the North Circular Road at North Richmond Street, commemorate him. Now, O'Connell is buried in a vault in Glasnevin Cemetery, over which there is a 160-foot-tall Irish round tower, which was built in 1869. As was his wish, his heart was sent to Rome, and we'll probably mention later on that he actually died on his way to Rome. He died in Genoa, in Italy, and northern Italy, and his heart was sent to Rome, and his body was brought back to Dublin for burial. Now, I'll just begin a few words about the meetings themselves, what really made him famous, and what we don't get done today, we will deal with next week. Now, we're getting round to, in the long term, the famous Clontarf Monster meeting on the 8th of October, 1843, that actually never took place. Now, Daniel O'Connell began the repeal agitation at his headquarters at the Corn Exchange, Burgh Quay, in April 1840, because he now felt he had achieved all he could by lobbying at Westminster. And this was especially true when Robert Peel became a Prime Minister for the second time in 1841. So he felt that he would have to take his fight towards the British in a different direction. Now, various repeal excitations and activities followed as he really began to mobilise the millions of Irish Catholics. And as I said, there were 8 million people in Ireland at the time, not all Catholic, but I'd safely say 95, even higher percent, were Catholics, to mobilise everyone in one mass movement for repeal of the Act of Union. Now, using various organisational names, such as the Catholic Committee, the Catholic Board, the Catholic Association, and especially the Repeal Association, all Catholics throughout the country felt involved and part of the political scene by paying their monthly penny, which also acted as a recruitment process, paying this penny to O'Connell's organisation. The penny was usually collected after Mass on Sundays, or in local what were known as reading rooms, which are really meeting places for O'Connell's supporters. Now, first this penny had been called the Catholic Rent, but later it became the Repeal Rent. Now, the Catholic clergy were the organisation's linchpin. O'Connell became Lord Mayor of Dublin for the year 1841-42, and after his term of Lord Mayor ended on January 3rd, 1843, he announced that 1843 would be repeal year, and with the new weapons of meetings, local parish meetings and monster or county diocesan meetings, he appears to have been certain that the power of the masses would ultimately win out. So we'll leave it at that for today, because I'm watching the clock and old Father Time catches up with us again. We'll get on to the Clontarf end of it hopefully next week. If we have to spin a third programme, well then so be it. Now, I usually end the last few weeks with a few words about friendship, and this is one is by Judith Viarist. And she says that the problems that plague a friendship are rarely 100% the other person's fault. We should re-examine carefully before we make up our mind and before we close it. Now, Robert Burns says, I want someone to laugh with me, someone to be grave with me, someone to please me and help my discrimination with his or own remark, and at times, no doubt, to admire my acuteness and penetration. An anonymous one says, friendship is possible only because people do not say to your face the things to say behind your back. Now, I don't know about that. When two friends part, they should lock up each other's secrets and exchange keys. The truly noble mind has no resentments. John Chatterton Collins says, in prosperity, our friends know us. In adversity, we know our friends. And I'll just take one more. The most I can do for my friend, this is by Henry David Thoreau, the most I can do for my friend is simply to be his friend. I have no wealth to bestow on him. If he knows that I am happy in loving him, he will want no other reward. Is not friendship divine in this? Okay, well, I'm going to leave it at that for today. Just to remind you, if you want to catch any of our programs again, you simply Google Near FM, go to Listen Again, go to Search and type in History or Community or my own name, Dennis McIntyre, and you'll get any of the programmes. I'll just leave you by saying that you'll be listening to the History and Community programme here on Near 90 FM. And until we meet again next week, this is Dennis McIntyre saying, Slán go fóill.